Hello and welcome back to our module two in this MVA session, which is on managing users, groups and licenses. So I'm Anthony Stephen, I'm here with Martin Kurtzer. And in this module, what we're going to be looking at is how we manage our users and licenses using the administration center, that's the Office 365 administration center. We're then looking at how we use, again, the Office 365 administration center to manage our security and distribution groups. And then finally, we'll talk about how to manage cloud identities with Windows PowerShell. So I don't know what your current level of expertise is with Windows PowerShell. The fact is that most of the things that you can do with Office 365, you can do in PowerShell, and there are some things that you can do in PowerShell which you can't actually do through the console. So that's unfortunate if you really do need a user interface to administer, because you are going to have to learn at least a few PowerShell commands to get the full administrative or full power of Office 365. So in our first section, we'll talk about managing users and licenses. As I said, this is with our administration center. So I'll be looking at creating users, how we manage those users, how we manage their licenses. Martin's going to do a demo here of how we create users in Office 365 and how you can do things like multi-editing. Then we'll talk about the various factors about deleting and restoring users before we finish off with some best practice guidelines and some of the common errors that people may get when they are doing this sort of user administration. Let's crack on then. So in our creating users, we've really got three main ways of creating and managing users when we're using, this is the Office through the Office 365 admin console. We can, if we've got cloud-only based users, in other words, users who simply have user accounts out in Office 365, then you need to do, then they are cloud-based users, and you simply those ones you go in through the Office 365 console or optionally through PowerShell, you can go in and administer them. If we've got Office 365 synchronized with our directory service, that's using DirSync, what we do there is that we create and manage the users in in Active Directory, and then those Active Directory users are then replicated across to Office 365. We can't actually manage them anymore in Office 365. And that's also the same question if we're using ADFS. The advantage with using ADFS is that we also get single pass, single sign-on, one account, one username and password, which works right the way across through Office 365, as well as with their on-premise environment, any on-premise applications they may have. In terms of our options that we've got to provision Office 365, so I've already mentioned the Office 365 portal. Hopefully most of you should be familiar with that now. It is a web-based tool. It does tie in to the Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, and Link Online, although you must remember those are actually really separate admin portals, but they're all linked in through the Office 365 portal. We've got PowerShell, which I've talked out about, and we're going to be looking at the Windows Azure, or in fact, it should now be Microsoft Azure, but they haven't changed the naming yet. It's going to be shortly going to be Microsoft Azure Active Directory module for PowerShell, which allows you to carry out those PowerShell for user management commands. We can also do things like use a CSV file for bulk imports. And again, if you come on the course, on course 20346A, sorry, 20346B, Rev, which will be the latest release of this course, the full ILT version of this course, then you will be doing some CSV file imports. And then, of course, the fourth option is directory synchronization, which additionally not only can do user management, but also can do, is a form of bulk user provisioning. More about that in module 10.
So with a lot of these ways of creating users, it depends on where the authority of that user is. If you want to have it authoritative in your Active Directory, it exists in your Active Directory, therefore it needs to exist in Office 365. You look at the latter ways of doing it with directory synchronization coupled with ADFS potentially. But if that user exists because you created it in Office 365, you look at the former way of creating users.
Indeed. So the point that Martin makes there is about where is the source of authority? And that is a vital question to ask whenever you're talking about directory services in Office 365. So what we can do with our Office 365 Admin Center is that we can administer either a single user or we can administer multiple users, and we can change settings for multiple users through the console. We can do things like we can add and change directory information, change their logon domains, we can change their sign-in status, and we can also specify what, you know, sign-in status is whether they are allowed to log on or not, and we can also change their user location. So you can change a user's location, even though once you've set up Office 365, you can't change your organization's location. Just a little point is that when you set up an organization for a particular country, that country always comes to the top of the user location when you're selecting that, when you're setting up a user and you want to configure their location. What we can then do is we can assign our licenses. For a user to be able to connect to, let's say, Exchange Online, to their mailbox, they need to have a license assigned. And we'll see how we can replace licenses and add to licenses. And then finally, you'll be able to see things like information on how many licenses have you been issued. And not surprisingly, there's a link to enable you to buy more licenses.
That's handy.
Very useful, that one, isn't it? Okay, so what Martin's going to do now is going to show you a quick demo on how we create users in Office 365 and also how we can multi-edit them as well.
So I'm here in the Office 365 Admin Center, and this is the default page if you selected not to see that greeting page. But when I go into the Office 365 Admin Center, all the various options is down here, and right down here we have the users and groups environment. And this is where we can create more users for our system. And this is very intuitive. It's similar to what you will expect from our other systems. And if I need to create a new user, I can just click here on the plus sign, which adds a new user. This will take me through a wizard of entering new users.
So, yeah, so things like details that you might provide, not surprisingly, their first name and their last name. You know what happens is when you're typing in the first name there, that actually it will auto-generate the a user's display name as well. I think you may find that one's been in that one's actually in use as well. That one's in use already.
Okay.
So, why don't you put yourself in?
Okay, I'm gonna try Peter.
Okay. So, yeah, so the display name is auto-created the first time. If you then go and subsequently change it, notice you need a user logon name. So this is the name that you're going to provide to the user to tell them to log on. And on the there is also, if you've got multiple domains, then we can drop down the domain list and select additional domains. Now, we haven't got that at the moment. We've only got the default domain. Mm-hmm. So things like job title and department and so on can be entered. Why don't you just stick him in marketing. Go on, for marketing department. That will come in a bit later when we do things like dynamic distribution lists. So office phone, mobile phone, fax numbers. Does anyone still use faxes? I believe so, yes.
Yes.
more information, zip codes and postal codes and so on. So we click next and that takes us through. So now we are talking about settings. We're going to come back and do the administrator settings, but that is an option here. But notice the user location setting. And top of the list was United Kingdom, because surprisingly, I was in the United Kingdom when I set this account up. And by the way, if you're having trouble with my accent, I'm sorry about that, but that is where I'm originally from. So once we've done that, now we've set our location, and now we can assign licenses. as an ordinary pilot, you get 25 user licenses for your pilot environment. For a fast track extended pilot, you get 250. So you probably wouldn't be creating user accounts manually for an extended pilot. So we've assigned some licenses, so we click next. And what it's going to do is it's going to send the temporary password to the administrator who's creating this user account, which in our case is Heidi. So we click create. And away we go. And that will then generate our new user account and also a random 8-character password, which then is emailed through to Heidi's email. And that can then be communicated securely to the user. Click finish, and that's a user account. Okay, so very simple to see how easy that is to create. And there are, sort of, say, the various other options that we'll be looking at as we go through the course, including, of course, directory synchronization, which is a main way that most organizations will probably create user account. So is that a cloud-based user that I've created or a directory synchronized user?
My guess would be that would be a cloud-based user.
Indeed, that's got to be a cloud-based user because we've got no connection to Active Directory at the moment through TrueDirSync. So deletion process. So what happens if we delete some users? You can either do that through the Admin Center portal, or you can do that through PowerShell. And what that does is it's a soft delete. So if you've deleted a user account, it then goes into our effectively a user recycle bin, and you can recover that user account from the user recycle bin as long as you do that within 30 days. If it's the 30 days has elapsed, you can actually go cap in hand to Microsoft support and ask them to restore that user account, or you simply create a new user account. Remember though, if you create a new user account, even if it has the same information as the old user account, that is a new user account. Think about, you know, about GUIDs, about globally unique identifiers in Active Directory. Same thing with Office 365 or with Windows Azure Active Directory. Microsoft Azure Active Directory. I've got to get used to saying that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have a soft delete period as well. In fact, do you want to just want to delete one of those users? So flick back to your portal. In fact, I think we've deleted. Yeah, just delete Peter there and do a restore on him.
So Peter is. I'm going to select Peter here, and I get a little context menu on the side, which will allow me to go and destroy him.
So once he's deleted, it pops you, reminds you about the 30 day point. So if you close that, and now what we can do is we can go into our deleted users tab up the top. And there we'll see a few deleted user accounts. Obviously, we've been doing a bit of testing on here as well. So you can select Peter Doe. Let's say we suddenly realize we need to bring that person back. And on the quick steps, click Restore Users and restore that user. And back they come. And there's a little log file as well. Oh, did you? I think you've restored. You're going to restore Melissa as well at the top there. So just making sure that we've checked those users have been, so he should now be restored. If you go back to active users, and then in active users, there we've got Peter Doe has been restored as well. And then you can go in and edit that user account. So there's our deleted users. No great problems. And hopefully people will, if they need to, you can recover those accounts.
Yep. So no more oops moments.
Indeed, yes. Of course, if you've got DirSync in place, you'll be deleting users in Active Directory and then synchronizing the deletion action across to Office 365. More about that in Module 10. So some common errors that we can have. So things like what you've got to remember is because you've now got users in typically in Active Directory and in Office 365. It may be that you don't really have a password policy defined in Active Directory. Now, hopefully, there aren't too many organizations like that, but it can happen. And now that the users have, because their mailboxes are in Office 365, that is applying a password policy, which is a mix of uppercase, lowercase, isn't it? 8 to 16, 8 to 16 characters, uppercase and lowercase and special characters. Users may not be used to that level of password complexity, and so when they try and log on to Office 365, they're going, "Oh my goodness, I can't log on because I've got this frightfully complex password to remember." Yeah, unfortunately, that is really a security requirement. That is not something that you would, although you can remove that complexity requirement from users, that is not a recommended setting. What else can happen? If the user leaves the organization, don't be too quick to subsequently go and delete their account, because of course what you'll lose then is their Exchange Online account, so therefore you won't be able to access their mailbox, and therefore what you need to make sure is that you actually make that, export that information maybe to a PST file or something like that, make sure that you can recover that information before you delete the user's account.
Yeah, in that case, it's a good idea just to block the user sign-in rights.
Yes, you block their rights. They can't sign in, but other users can still access the content of their mailbox. Mm-hmm. So some best practices then. When you're designing user accounts, think about the future. Make sure that you've got a naming scheme which is going to work for your organization. Make sure that you enter the names accurately. Because, again, nothing confuses users more than not having their correct username, apart from, of course, complex passwords. And then, finally, with DirSync, when we are setting up DirSync, one thing you need to look out for are duplicate accounts that have been where there was a cloud-based user and an on-premise user, but their accounts are almost the same, but not quite, and you've ended up with a duplicate user. Right, so I think we're going to move on to and talk a little bit more about distribution groups. Now, when we talk about security distribution groups, we actually have a number of different group types in Office 365, and it can be a little bit confusing. When we go on to Module 7, which is our Exchange Online module, I'll be talking more about those and the differences, sort of like a compare and contrast. So we'll look at creating and editing Office 365 security groups. Martin's going to do a quick demo of that. We'll talk about how we delete those, talk about the use of Exchange Online and SharePoint groups. We'll just sort of cover that in outline and then finish off with some common errors and some best practices. So our Office 365 security groups, these are simply groups for grouping user accounts together. You've got to remember that an Office 365 group is not mail-enabled. It's just a group. It's a logical entity for bringing user accounts together and then assigning security permissions within Office 365. So, for example, if you want to give people access, a group of people access to a SharePoint site, you might define a group in SharePoint, a security group in Office 365, put your users into the Office 365 security group, and put the security group into the SharePoint group. And then if you need to give a user access to SharePoint, you just add them to the Office 365 security group and the permissions work their way forward. It's a bit like if you think about with Active Directory, users into global groups go into domain local groups or local groups, and then the local groups get the permissions, isn't it? It's very similar sort of architecture to that. Okay, so we can grant permissions to our sites and resources through things like SharePoint Online. You can create the groups either through the portal or through PowerShell if you want, if you're quite up on PowerShell. It gets a little bit, because you've got to use your user IDs, haven't you? You've got to find the GUID string. It's not quite as easy as you might think. It's probably, most time, unless you're doing a lot of automation and a lot of group management, go for the admin console. And then finally, you can nest your security groups, and that will help you with your organization as long as you just don't do too much of it and get yourselves confused. Yeah. Right, so Martin's going to do now a quick demo of creating some security groups and show you how easy that is in Office 365.
So we're still in the Office 365 Admin Center, and we went down to users and groups, and we have active users, deleted users, and right here you'll find the security groups tab where we can go and create groups. It is it looks similar to the creating a new user UI, and this is where we can create a new group. We click on that plus, and it brings up the wizard for us to create a new group.
How about a sales group?
Okay, so let's.
And we probably want a marketing group as well. So here's you've got an option to provide a sort of little brief description as to the group, and that's quite useful, particularly if you're not going to be the only administrator or when you hand over the administration to somebody else. It's useful for them to know what the function of a particular group was. And then what we can do is you can add members, and that pops up a little selection dialog box. Up it comes. And now you can look in the list of existing users and select them. So, let's bring a few of those people in. And me, that'll do fine. And then OK that. And click Save. And that's it. You're finished. I mean, that is a new group. What I'll just point out, though, that new group is just an Office 365 group. It's not an Exchange Online group. Okay, and again, we'll be seeing the difference between the two in later modules. So that's it. There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That is as easy as it can be.
As easy as it gets. Okay. if you delete a security group, then what the issue there is that the deleted security groups, they are permanently deleted. Okay, so there's no recovery option in that. So you end, there's no recycle bin for groups. But what you've got to remember is that a deleted group isn't an issue because you can simply recreate a new group. All right. Again, it doesn't affect users. Just recreate new group, assign it the right permissions, and add the users to that group.
Yeah, it's important to remember that when you create a group, it's not, or when you delete a group, it's not really the end of the world.
Indeed, yeah.
You can really just recreate that group and assign the permissions to that
group.
Exactly,
that's right. So again, you can delete it through the portal or delete it through PowerShell using the remove MSOL group. And then there's a switch and you need to put in the group ID and remove it that way. With Exchange Online and SharePoint Online groups, now these are a little bit different. And with Exchange Online groups, we have three main types of group. We have what are called distribution groups, which are for mail distribution. Again, that's like a distribution group in Exchange On-Prem. We have mail-enabled security groups, which again are like mail-enabled security groups in Exchange On-Premises. And those can be used, again, they're used for email delivery and for assigning permissions within Exchange Online. And then we have this dynamic distribution group. And a dynamic distribution group evaluates its group membership dynamically based on a number of factors. For example, department membership is one factor that you can use for a dynamic distribution group. And also, remember all those, what are they, the custom attributes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, remember when they came in Exchange On-Prem.
Yeah, extendable attribute 1, 2,
exactly, 1 through to 15.
Yeah.
And again, you can use those extendable attributes as a way of selecting users to be in dynamic distribution groups. SharePoint Online groups, these are users who have a similar permissions level, particularly within a site or a site collection, so like edit, read, contribute, author, and so on. And it does depend on which template you use as to what groups are available. And what you do with those, as we pointed out earlier, is you'd simply put your Exchange Office 365 security groups into your SharePoint Online security groups and then assign the permissions to the SharePoint Online groups. If you look in some of the Office 365 content, the reference content, you'll find a list of sort of some of the default groups in SharePoint. And it does vary quite a bit according to which template you select. So some common errors and best practices, poor documentation, and how often have we seen that?
Yeah.
Okay, so document, make sure that you understand your security group structure and make sure that other people taking over from you also understand it. Because you know, if you're on holiday, you're on the beach, whatever, you know, you're getting the raise in, the last thing you want is a phone call from work saying, or an email, or an IM, or whatever it is, you know, because you can't get away these days, is saying, I don't understand the security structure of these groups. So make sure that you've got it documented. It'll save you a lot of time and grief when you're on holiday.
That is why I immediately put a comment into that description when I created the group, because I knew I don't want to go back to that.
Absolutely, yes. So plenty of information in the description, and make sure you're documenting what you're doing. Watch out about things like if you've got an overly complex, and think about what are they going to be the interdependencies between your various groups. And if you're using dynamic distribution groups, which we'll talk a little bit more in Module 7, do watch out about if a user unintentionally becomes a member of a distribution group simply by changing that user's name. If you put them into the marketing group and you've got a dynamic distribution group that picks up on marketing, bang, they'll be in that group. So, and make sure that that's all updated and that you're using the correct fields and the correct values to choose your dynamic distribution groups.
Yes, you may be actually allow users to change their own department in ADE so that the attributes are always up to date. And then by allowing them to change their own attributes, they may make themselves available or make themselves a member of a group that they shouldn't be a part of.
Indeed. So that might be a case of some sort of authentication process or maybe a drop-down list to select, so they can only select, so they can't misspell the group name that they're a member of. Mm. So some best practices, think about organising your users logically, think about around their requirements for access. What we need to do is, I've told about this process of creating SharePoint groups, adding Office 365 groups into those SharePoint groups, and then adding users to the Office 365 groups rather than adding them directly into the SharePoint groups. Any naming conventions, make sure they're simple, clear, understandable by people who are going to take over the organization after you've moved on to greater things, CIO or whatever. Think about some sort of provisioning process that, again, needs to be specified and documented within the organization, and then have a procedure in the background to make sure that you can maintain those groups effectively. Right, our final section on this module is about PowerShell, and I'll talk about how you can use Windows PowerShell to do user and group management and license management, in fact, within Office 365. Martin's, who's much more of a PowerShell guru than I am, is going to be doing a few sort of PowerShell commands. We're going to be doing the PowerShell commands in just the simple PowerShell window. Be aware that you will probably want to do those in the PowerShell IDE and then save those as scripts if you're carrying out repeated tasks. So PowerShell, great. You know, it's a very, very powerful tool. It's a great way, particularly if you've come from a sort of Unix background, etc., to transition you across to Windows Server management and Office 365 management. So we'll look at those managing users' licenses, security groups, and, of course, finish off with some errors and best practices. So when we're using PowerShell with Office 365, it's, of course, Windows Azure Active Directory for it's the module for PowerShell. I am expecting that will be renamed because it's now called Microsoft Azure, sort of branding change there. But at the moment, if you download it from the Microsoft website, then you'll find it's Windows Azure Active Directory module. So it's a module for PowerShell, bearing in mind that you generally run it using administrative rights on your local machine. So it allows you to connect to Office 365. So the first thing you're going to need to do is some sort of connect command and give it your credentials to be able to connect to the Office 365 environment. You install the module, start up the Azure PowerShell module window itself, connect in, provide your credentials, and now you're connected and ready to go and carry out the administration you want to do. Right, so Martin, let's have a look at creating some users in PowerShell. Have you actually connected up yet then?
So I have the Active Directory module running in Windows PowerShell already. So if you want to create users, you can use the normal PowerShell that's installed by default in Windows Server 2012 or Windows the Windows Client 8.1. You have to install the Windows PowerShell components or the Windows Azure Active Directory module, as it's called currently, and then you can connect up to the service. And the beauty of PowerShell is you don't have to remember all these commands. You can just press tab if you forget, and then that will complete the name for you, and you could then go ahead and connect to the...
So that connect MSOL service, so that's the command there that's prompting Martin to put in his credentials there. Also notice that the window itself says administrator, and that's because you're running it with administrator credentials. So in he pops the password. Again, this is our Heidi at Lucerne Publishing. Heidi is, of course, a global admin, and because she was the first person to, she was the person who installed Office 365, she actually has organizational roles and rights within Exchange Online as well. So there's no actual response. Once it does it, you just think, well, what have I done? Well, you are, once you've done that connect MSOL service and you've pressed enter and validated, you're now connected to Office 365. So now Martin can crack on with the commands.
Yeah, so let's create the new user. So as with all PowerShell commands, it's a verb combination of a object, so verb object. And I'm going to create a new user, so the command is new -something. Again, I don't like typing a lot, so I'm going to go through some of the commands here. And I can press Shift Tab to go to the previous command. There's the command to create a new user.
And you saw there were several other sort of new MSOL groups, and it's new Microsoft Online User. Okay, that's the syntax that we're using here. Now, what Martin's showing here is that we've got a number of additional switches as well. And so this dash user principal name is a switch, and he's just entering we're going to create a new user. It's Lucerne Publishing. It's got an E in it, by the way. One thing you do have to remember when you create a UPN of a user, it has to be a domain that is currently registered. Oh, and it'll be on 030 as well.
Okay.
Just do it anyway, and you will see, see the result. Yeah,
let's see what happens if we do it wrong.
Yeah, excellent. And of course, the great thing about PowerShell is if you do a command and it's wrong, you just press up arrow, and then it'll repeat. You know, it'll buffer the last command for you. Notice with some of the switches that you have to put the values in inverted commas, but you didn't need to do that with user principal name because it accepts it directly. So again, username, first name, Melissa, and then last name, Macbeth. That's very unlucky if you say that on stage, isn't it? Yeah. You have to call it the Scottish play. You're not allowed to say Macbeth on stage. And there we go, and this is what you don't want to see when you do a PowerShell command, by the way, lots of red text. So really what it's saying is that it's user principal name provided is not a verified domain, and it isn't, because what we left out was the Lucerne Publishing 030, which is a registered domain, and that is currently our only registered domain. Good. And there we go. Now notice that it's the password appears, that password value appears. The thing to notice about that is you don't actually get an email this time. Mm-hmm. So Heidi won't get an email telling her what the new password is. If she doesn't note down that password, then that's it. She'll have to do a password reset process. In fact, do you want to just flick back to Office 365 and just to show that actually on the users... There can be a little delay occasionally, by the way. But no, there she is. So there's Melissa Macbeth. And what we'd also notice is, of course, that this is just all we've done is create a user account. We haven't actually licensed her for anything. So if you go into her details when it actually... there we go. So there you can see that we've currently got no licenses assigned. So she won't be able to log on with the information we've provided.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. Right, so there's a new users created.
Yeah.
Hope you're all happy with that, and hope you're itching to get stuck into PowerShell. So if we're going to manage users, we've got this command, which is new MSOL user for creating users. Notice that we've also got a license assignment switch for assigning licenses at the same time. If not, if we don't assign licenses when we create them, then we've got the switch for set MSOL user license, which allows us to do a bulk update of licenses. And we can also do stuff like assigning, let's say we've got, an E1, and we want to update it to E3. So then we can do the license assignment switch and do with from a standard license to a standard pack to an enterprise pack. And that will then change and update those licenses with our Office 365 users.
Or if you want to say you've initially only given somebody an Exchange mailbox and you want to add other functionality like the link license and so on,
yeah,
you can do that.
Absolutely. So lots of options there that you've got with PowerShell. You can delete users as well, so you can use the remove MSOL user. Remember, of course, that there's options for a soft delete, which is recoverable for after 30 days, or you can go in and do a hard delete, in other words, go and delete it from the mailbox, from the recycle bin. And then I think you've still got another 14 days to go back to Microsoft support and say, can I please have my user account back? But you better be quick. And then we can simply do this restore MSOL user, which has equivalent functionality to what we saw doing when Martin restored that user from in the Office 365 admin console. Managing security groups, a little bit more tricky here because we have to use the security group's identifiers. And it's not quite a straightforward a process. There are ways you can do a display name, aren't they? But you have to put a second line of or a first line of code in to find the display name, and then once you've got the display name, load that up as a variable, and then you can put that variable and enter it into the command. But so it's not quite as straightforward as it is with users. But again, we can create new MSOL user. We'll create a user and then remove MSOL group. Sorry, new MSOL group. We'll create a group and again remove it. Remove MSOL group to remove that group. So this point I'm making about adding users and groups to security groups, it's not quite as straightforward. Generally, it's easier to use the console. So even if you are, even for the most intrepid PowerShell fan, you know, typically it's quicker and easier to do that particular operation through the console.
Yeah, this is like you said earlier, it's something that people will do if they have to do like thousands of users and you want to document all of that using PowerShell, then you'll use the PowerShell method.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Some common errors then and best practices. There are, you know, this is only a small selection of what could errors that people could possibly make. I hope that none of you will make these, though. So things like if you change a license, if you remove an Exchange Online license from a user, then not surprisingly, that disconnects their mailbox. You can subsequently go in and reconnect mailboxes, but just so aware that that will happen, because users really do complain if you do that. If you delete groups by mistake, well, tough. Sorry, you're going to have to recreate it. If you delete users, go into the user recycle bin, haul them out by the scruff of their neck, kicking and screaming, and deliver them back into the active users list. Reviewing and testing PowerShell scripts. It's a development environment. You know, you need to test your scripts, particularly if they're doing complex environments. Now, we've got what if, haven't we?
Yes.
Yeah. So do you want to just briefly touch on what if will do for us?
So what if is a nice construct that's available in PowerShell. So whenever you want to run a command, you can just add the dash what if command, and it will actually go and check if it would be able to do that, but it wouldn't do it at the end. So it will just test that everything is fine for running that command, if you've made any mistakes, and if there's any issues with the backend perhaps. But if you have the dash what if command at the end of the PowerShell command, then it's not going to actually do it. So that's a nice way of testing.
And what sort of output will you see coming from that?
It will say basically what if, and it will then say whether or not it would have been able to do it.
So if there was an error in your script, it will tell you that there would have been an error. So
yes.
You can fix the script error, and then once you're sure it's going to do what you want to do, knock off the what if switch, and away it will go and run the command.
Yeah.
Got to remember the difference between connecting to Azure Active Directory, in other words, that's for user and group management, and actually connecting to the tenant itself, to the tenant account. And also, of course, the user accounts, which are a separate thing altogether. And finally, you do need to set user location. And that was another point I didn't make about when we created our... Melissa Macbeth, that was it. Mm. When we created Melissa's account, we didn't actually give her a location. Mm. And again, Office 365, some of the services are restricted by user location. Mm. So therefore, you do need to make sure that you would go in and then assign them a user location, which you can also do in PowerShell as well. And you can do clever stuff. You can find out which users have not got a location assigned, and you can find out which users have not got licenses assigned, and then go in and assign those licenses and users. So some best practices. Yes, test your PowerShell scripts thoroughly. Particularly if it's going to make sweeping changes within Office 365, just like you would do if you were creating scripts to run in Active Directory. You need a similar sort of change control program. Make sure that you validate that the changes have actually been made, the ones that you're expecting to see have been made. And then finally, permissions. Only the appropriate people should have the permissions to access to administer Office 365 through Windows PowerShell or through console. And that's another thing, isn't it? The console the console and your PowerShell permissions are one and the same.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Well, that's the end of Module 2. So what we've had a look at is how we can manage users and licensing with the Administration Center. We've also covered how you can administer security groups and distribution groups. And then we've looked at how you can do cloud administer using PowerShell, these are all cloud identities. What we're now going to move on to is how that we do administer, we actually create administrator. How we create our administrator groups and then set those up and configure different administrators for different functions within Office 365.